And Kathy Dawes now, along with Ernie Minton at K-State. He's Associate Dean with the College of Agriculture, and we welcome you today, Ernie, and appreciate you being here with us.
Well, thank you very much, Kathy. It's good to be here.
And a couple different things we thought we could talk about, and of course, we're into the summer months now, but that doesn't mean things aren't still going on at K-State, and I think sometimes people forget about that. But one thing, there's been a lot of research done, and I know Kansas State University has some involvement with this, but there's some new research having to do with a noxious weed that really has people very concerned, and you're going to share some, it looks like quite the report that you have in front of you there.
That's right. I have to have my notes in front of me to make sure I stay on script, but this particular topic, the weed itself is called Sericea lespidiza, and our scientist, a range scientist, one in particular, Dr. K.C. Olson, that's K period C period as opposed to C-A-S-E-Y, in the Department of Animal Sciences and Industry, has really been the leader in this new effort. He's collaborated with Dr. Walt Fick in agronomy to look at some creative ways to attack this weed, and they've had some good success here lately with a technique called midsummer, late summer burning, which is unusual for us in the Flint Hills. We're certainly used to April being the time for burning, and that's traditionally been the one that accomplishes the major objectives of burning in the Flint Hills, and that is to control the invasion of woody species, maintain the grassland, and also support gains of cattle in the Flint Hills in the stocker industry, and of course the cow-calf segment as well. So really, really exciting research.
Well, it's interesting you bring that up. I was just working on some audio earlier this morning. It's hard to believe, you know, just a few months ago we had those horrible wildfires that occurred. And I know that the ranchers are still recovering from that. That was just, that really had a blow to our ranchers in that part of the state.
Right, right. That was very, very tragic, and certainly something that we need to keep our eye on in terms of maybe alternatives for managing the grassland in that part of the state as well. I'll say a little bit about this weed again. It's interesting. It was actually brought in to the United States from Asia as a soil conservation approach. And the story really reminds me a little bit, if you've traveled in the southeast part of the United States, this weed called kudzu, which tends to take over trees and telephone poles and that sort of thing, and so it was a good idea that sort of went bad. And in many cases, this wild type, Sericea lespidiza, is a similar sort of situation. We find that in the Flint Hills, it's very, very invasive, very, very hard to control, and so other methodologies, the typical spring burns don't work. Cattle do not like to graze it, so trying to force them to graze it is a futile effort. And so Dr. Olson and Dr. Fick started thinking about this and looking at ways to attack this weed by maybe hitting it when it's vulnerable, which happens to be during its flowering time, when it's flowering and then eventually setting seed. And so these late August, early September burns, they have found really gets at this weed at its seed production stage, and that's looking to be very, very effective. I should mention, and they'd hasten to warn me, that they're just on the front end, and by that, they've 3 years of replication, they got a fourth plan, but the results are looking really very, very promising as an alternative to herbicides, which don't work very well, and as I said, cattle don't tend to graze it. As it turns out, small ruminants, sheep and goats, do graze Sericea lespidiza. They don't seem to be offended by the tannins in the weed like cattle are. But culturally, that's just not a practice that we anticipate will catch on in the Flint Hills, being cattle country, and so this late summer burning appears to have a lot of promise.
Now, any issues with trying to do that? I know we've had a lot of environmentalists that have been concerned as it is about, you know, some of the smoke and
yeah, that's
even
right.
Spring burnings.
And a great question. it may actually, there may be some ancillary benefits that were not anticipated. That's the way research generally goes. Yes, the situation for those who are not aware is that the traditional burning time in the Flint Hills in Kansas is in April. And this April is a good example of how burning gets concentrated only in a few days, because it rains and rains, or the wind conditions are such that burning is forced onto a few good days, and then we have a tremendous smoke load and particulate load as a result of that. And so, yes, we, and that's collectively in the Flint Hills, have gotten in trouble with cities in Nebraska, Lincoln and Omaha, I think, and then other cities for exceedances of the allowable levels of particulates in the air. So this late summer burning may move some of that burning pressure to a different time of the year and provide some management alternatives for ranchers who need to burn to preserve the grassland that they have invested in. But moves that burning in some years out of the April time frame. So we think that could be a plus. The other point that I would make is this late summer burning really needs to be compatible with forage production in the spring and the early intensive stocking that needs to go on to really reap the financial benefits too of grazing cattle in the Flint Hills.
Now this wheat, I wish there was a shorter name for it.
I know.
What does it look like?
Well, I'm not very good at that kind of thing, but those people who are familiar with plant material in the Flint Hills recognize it very readily. That's a bit of learning I need to do, actually. But people see it, in areas here around Riley County that are actually developing. For example, up around the Warner Park area, there's a good bit of grass up there and some Shericia lespides that tends to hide, I think, in draws and places where fire doesn't get access to very easily. And of course, in an urban setting like close to Manhattan, we just don't do that sort of thing. So it can get, I've been told, very, very tall, and is and at that stage becomes a prolific seed producer. I think KC told me 850 pounds of seed per acre when left unchecked. And so it really deep-rooted, lots of seed production, and so it has a lot of opportunity to really spread through the grassland.
And, of course, the real danger there is it overtakes what we want to have there.
That's right.
Which is, the regular old grass.
Right, right, right. And so in many respects, it's like the benefit of burning in the spring, controlling woody material, particularly cedars, but it's the same really principle. If left unchecked, it will invade that grassland and make it less productive.
Well, definitely, and it sounds like the research has been helpful and making some progress on that. And
absolutely, and so after this fourth year, I think Casey and Dr. Fick have some additional things planned to look at burning practices to control Shericia lespidiza, and also confirm that those practices don't negatively impact cattle performance in the Flint Hills. The other thing I'd mention too is this is a topic that's so really critically important to Kansas agriculture, and yet federal funding for research for this kind of thing is really, really very difficult to get. And so we at the Kansas Agricultural Experiment Station, that part of K-State Research and Extension that does the research part, have been very, very supportive, and then KC and Dr. Fick have been trying to seek additional support, and they've been working with a nonprofit group of ranchers in the Flint Hills that have formed what's called the Flint Hills Legacy Alliance. So it's a concern to producers and the stakeholders who are negatively affected by this weed have come together and provided some support as well.
You know, it's interesting because your average citizen probably is scratching their head a little bit. Why should I be concerned with a noxious weed like this? But in the long run, it could impact a lot of different areas.
Oh, absolutely. The economic impact of losing the cow-calf and stocker industry in the Flint Hills because we've lost the prairie, there's that economic piece, but from an ecological perspective as well, this range is so very important, you know, not just to cattle production, but a number of wildlife species as well. So the grassland has benefits, yes, to the cattle industry, but beyond that as well.
You say it came to us probably from Asia. How did it get here?
Well, I think actually it was actively imported, again, thinking that on hillsides and developed areas that tended to erode, it provide this soil conservation benefit. And so, again, it was brought in purposefully, but not really maybe considering how rapidly it would spread and what the negative impacts of this weed would be.
How interesting. Well, you can almost compare it to some of the other issues we've had with, you know, some of the trees that we're always fighting and, you know, that kind of thing.
Yeah, so lots of analogies, good ideas, but that turned out to be maybe not so good in the long run.
Any other research that we need to update people about while we have you in today?
Yeah, I think one of the things that we could touch on as well is we've got, of course, a unique department in the College of Agriculture, the Department of Grain Sciences and Industry. And that department is unique in that it provides bachelor and graduate degrees that really support the milling and baking industry. And so that department offers a bachelor's degree in milling science, in bakery science, but then they also offer a bachelor's degree in feed science. And so traditionally, you think of feed science, you think of livestock feed, which is part of it, obviously. But more recently, we've gotten into a venture around pet food. And we begun this about 5 years or so ago with the part-time first hiring of a pet food professional, Dr. Greg Aldrich. I was actually trained in beef cattle nutrition, but made the transfer over to companion animals, really, really well known in the industry. And this has turned out to be a fantastic fit for our feed science area and a nice add-on to it. Both emphasis at the undergraduate and the graduate level, and then, of course, at the graduate level, the research that goes along with providing thesis options for both master's and doctoral students. I might mention that, and I didn't actually know this until we started exploring this whole pet food area, is the footprint of the pet food industry here in Kansas, up around the Sabetha, Bern area, up into Nebraska and over to Topeka, tremendous number of pet food companies and an emphasis also on pet food manufacturing. So there's a good economic reason for the state of Kansas, for Kansas State University to plant a flag, so to speak, in this pet food area. And that's another thing. No one else is doing it, actually. So not only is it a fit for our grain science department and the feed science major, but there's a void there, actually, as well. The other thing that really makes it fit with our mission is, you know, it sits right between the livestock processing and the grain processing industries using byproducts from both of those. So, again, Why would the College of Agriculture be involved in pet food research? And the reason is because it's really part of the traditional industry that we serve as well.
Well, and let's face it, the pet food industry is huge right now. We've become increasingly attached to our little furry companions, and I think we are starting to pay a lot more attention. And nutritionally, I think we're wanting the right thing for those pets also.
Absolutely, and you know, really that's part of it, what goes into pet food. And of course, the manufacturing of pet food anymore has the same food safety implications as the production of processed human food as well. You know, you have a bag of pet food kibbles at home, and a three-year-old reaches in. It better not be contaminated with salmonella and other kinds of bacteria. So there's that piece of it. The nutrition is, as you mentioned, but also there's good evidence that sort of the growing global middle class, adding a pet to the family becomes really about the third thing they do after the other kinds of things are taken care of. So there is that piece as well.
Well, it's been a pleasure to have you. Anything else you just want to leave folks with today? We're starting to run out of time.
Here. Well, no, I just wrap up by saying appreciate the opportunity to share you know, what we do at K-State Research and Extension. The only other thing I'd add, Kathy, is often, particularly in Topeka, when we say research and extension, people hear extension and don't think about the research piece. So I'm glad we had an opportunity to talk about a couple of new areas that we're focusing on the research side.
And again, we've had with us Ernie Minton today, and he's Associate Dean, Research and Graduate Programs, College of Agriculture, Kansas State Research and Extension, and appreciate you stopping by today. You've been listening to In Focus on News Radio, KMAN.
Moving up on 10 a.m. tomorrow on KMAN's In Focus, our guest, Assistant Professor of Political Science at K-State, Dr. Nate Burkhead. Always a terrific conversation with him. Clark Howard, Rush Limbaugh, Dan Patrick, The Game, and the Royals at 6:30 tonight on KMAN.
Come in and see your neighbors at Carpet One of Manhattan on Fort Riley Boulevard. They've got you covered. KMAN, Manhattan.
CBS News. I'm Steve Kathan. As questions swirl about contacts with Russia, the Trump White House may have new people to come up with some answers. Live to CBS's Stephen Portnoy.
The White House Communications Director.